birthday party?
Then you got a freaking miracle. There you go.
Welcome to the Abracadam Podcast. I'm your host, stand-up comedy magician Danny Whitson. All right, I hope my abracadamits are getting stuff done, son, having a good week. It's been a pretty good week. This week's been a little wet outside here in East Tennessee. We've been getting a lot of rain from Hurricane Dumbass. I'm not sure what we're calling them. But other than that, not a bad week. Not a bad week at all. I'm still on cloud nine, man. Last weekend, I was in at the Idiot Box Comedy Club in Greensboro, North Carolina, and it was such a fun show, such a great group. So if you are listening, Greensboro, thank you. I love you guys. You guys were so much fun. Also, a big shout out to Antoinette's cousin, Celeste and Logan, for putting us up there in Charlotte and making an amazing breakfast for us the following day. You guys are awesome. I love you guys. Thank you so much. Hey, I do want to give a big shout out. I got some show dates. I can't forget these show dates real quick. This weekend. So if you are listening right now, this weekend, I'm going to be right here in Knoxville this Sunday, October 21st, 11 a.m. I'm going to be at CreepyCon. Yes, I'm going to be at CreepyCon here at the Jacobs Building doing my comedy magic seance show. Okay? Now, here's the thing, y'all. I only do this show around this time of year, late summer, early fall, okay? And we have a lot of fun. I'm going to be talking to some ghosts, y'all. I'm talking to some ghosts. And that's going to be this Sunday at CreepyCon, 11 a.m., there in front of the main stage. So if you got any plans, you definitely don't want to miss it because we're going to have an abracadam good time. And also, CreepyCon, man, that's a badass con. So if you guys are into anything horror, anything creepy, any type of scary movie stuff, you definitely want to check out this con. CreepyCon, man, it's awesome. There's a lot of super cool stuff to see and do, especially the Comedy Seance Magic Show. You want to check that out. But anyways, let's get right into the sponsors for today's episode. Okay. Well, today's episode is brought to you by Rosie Tattoos. Custom tattoos designed to suit your style in a friendly and clean environment. I've been getting my tattoos done by Rosie for a while now, and I couldn't recommend anyone else because she does excellent work. As a matter of fact, I got an appointment to see Rosie here in just a few weeks, and I cannot wait to get my ink therapy done, baby. Rosie gets free consultations by Facebook Messenger, Instagram, or by email. Shoot her an email at rosietattoos@yahoo.com. Give Rosie a call today at 865-281-3451 or go see Rosie at 5710 Kingston Pike, Knoxville, Tennessee. Get your ink therapy done. You know you want a tattoo. Go see Rosie Tattoos. This episode is also brought to you by Will's Towing. Located at 2081 Oak Ridge Turnpike, Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Now, guys, no one likes to be broke down on the side of the road. It's awful. It sucks. But don't panic. If this does ever happen, give Will Roberts a call at 865-272-5300 and let Will Roberts take care of your towing needs. Will will come pick it up, and he will park that car anywhere you need him to park it. If you want that car set in your living room, Will will put it in your living room. Also, we've all seen those tow truck drivers that show up and they look kind of sketch. You know, like they may have been touching a possum before they came up to you. You know what I mean? One of those guys. You never have to worry about that at Will's Towing. Everybody who works at Will's Towing is clean, safe, and very friendly to deal with. So, if your car breaks down, you need a towing service at all, give Will Roberts a call at Will's Towing. That's 865-272-5300. All right, Abracadamits. Now, I'm super excited for today's guest on the Abracadam podcast. Well, first of all, let me just say this. A few months back, I was lucky enough to land the part in a movie that was being filmed right here in East Tennessee. Yes, It's a hilarious script. When I read the script, I thought, this is absolutely funny. Whoever wrote this knew funny, knows funny. And I was excited to get the opportunity to be a part of it. The name of the movie, I'll go ahead and tell you, is WJHCAM. It's a comedy horror movie, and which takes place right here in East Tennessee. So that will be out this winter, okay? And I will be talking more about that film. But also, right now, you can hop on Amazon Prime and see the first film from this film producer called The Hike. And you can see that on Amazon Prime right now. Be sure to check that out and give it 5-star ratings if you would. That would be super awesome, abracadamits. But now today's guest, and also him and his partner, they're doing a whole trilogy of movies called The Smoky Mountain Chronicles. So a trilogy, a slew, whatever you want to call it. But definitely look forward to seeing this thing come together. It's going to be really cool to watch these flicks. But yeah, today's guest, he has a lot of titles. He's a comic. He's an actor. He's a wrestler. He's a ghost hunter. He's a radio DJ. But most importantly, for this episode, he is a filmmaker. So if you will, abracadamits, sit back and relax and enjoy my fun conversation with the mastermind behind WJHCAM and The Hike, Vinny Vineyard.
All right, I'm excited. We got my good friend Vinny Vineyard here today on the Abracadam podcast. How you doing, Vinny?
I'm doing good, baby.
I'm glad to finally get you on here. I know we've been talking about it for a little while. We finally got you on. But I'll tell you what, if you don't mind, do you care to go ahead and introduce yourself to the listeners?
Toot, toot, baby. It's time to ride the funk train. This is Funkmaster V here, baby. I'm going to put a glide in your slide, a dip in your hip. We're going to take it back to the mothership. That's what we're going to do.
Dude, you went like straight into your inner DJ. You know, it was...
My alter ego, Funkmaster V, we'll let him take over from time to time. He's a little bit more interesting, but he's a little bit more of an a-hole, so we'll keep him on check over here.
Well, let's see. Who is Funkmaster? Who is this guy? Let's hear about it. Who is Funkmaster V?
He's about 90% of who I am. He's kind of, you know, I have a history in pro wrestling, so they say the best wrestling characters are the ones that are yourself, just kind of amped up to 110%. I'm kind of more of a, I'd say Funkmaster is a little bit, he purports that he's a little bit more luckier than the ladies than the actual Vinny Vineyard is, but he's probably his own worst enemy too. You know, he kind of gets himself, he's a comedic foil to himself. He gets himself involved in some, but, you know, Funkmaster is a pro wrestling character. He also, when I was playing music, we had a unique shtick. I was the bad guy in the band. Like, the band would play Gin and Juice or some sort of song about women's bodies. And I would say, at the end of the song, I'd be like, that song was real cool, but I think it objectified women, you know, and the whole crowd would be like, shut up, you know, or whatever. I'd be like, I think that song glorifies drugs, you know, and it was just kind of a way to make the lead singer look cooler. And and I took that into wrestling after that. So,
well, okay. Well, let's do this. Now, Vinny, you know, because you got that hint of an accent, where are you originally from?
I was born in Baltimore. I don't have a Baltimore accent because people in Baltimore screw up the O's. Ooh, how are you? I have no idea where my accent is from. I got into radio real young, like four. I was on the radio at four. No, I'm kidding. I was, 19, 20 or something. And then my first boss was this crazy World War II veteran. He slapped me occasionally. He was just a crazy, it was a different time.
Yeah.
You do that today, you'd own the network. But he was a real nut, but he believed, he grew up WABC out of New York. He trained my voice. He wanted me to train my voice for the piano. And when I did, over time, my voice got this weird New Orleans, Boston, Knoxville, kind of weird amalgamation of accents. So when people are like, where are you from? I'm like, I told you it wouldn't make sense. But yeah, it's different. I speak a lot different than the people I went to high school with. I'll tell you that much.
Well, I'll tell you, so you did, you went, did you go to school around here or was it up in Baltimore?
I went to school here in Knoxville.
When I say here, I mean Knoxville. Yes, Knoxville.
Yeah, I was a Knoxvillian for a long time before I moved to Pigeon Forge, but yeah.
Okay, good deal. Well, okay, well, the interesting thing about you, Vinny, is, you know, I met you as a filmmaker, but also, though, you have a background in several different things, including stand-up comedy and wrestling. So I definitely want to talk about those, but let's talk about something that first that's near and dear to my heart, stand-up comedy.
Okay.
So, you know, what got you into stand-up? And now you're not currently performing, are you?
No.
Okay. So let's hear that story. Let's hear it.
I could do, like, if you told me you need me to do 20 minutes, I could drive up there and do 20 minutes. I don't know how good it would be, but on the car ride, I'd go, okay, I'm going to do this. But stand up to me, I loved David Letterman, and I loved New York. I always loved watching it, sneaking and watching that show at night. And when I was in North Carolina, I'd stay up late at my sister's and watch Letterman. I'd stay up late at night, and I loved how the city looked, and there was something romantic about it, and I loved the deadpan. What's funny to me, what has always been funny to me, and this goes into my bad guy pro wrestler thing, is I always liked comedians that were struggling. I just thought that the comedian who is dying on stage was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in my life. I mean, there's something about a guy who's wanting to make everybody happy, and he's failing. And just the nervousness, and you can just read it on his face. And so I don't know, my act and stuff when I was doing it, I people all the time recite that they like Lenny Bruce or Richard Pryor or Dave Chappelle or however old they are. And I liked Henny Youngman. I liked Don Rickles. I liked, David Letterman. I liked a lot of guys that were hack, you know, joke comedians. I liked bad jokes. And so it was an interesting time. I was good at it. The problem with me is that I was in Tennessee in the 90s, and doing stand-up comedy was like, I would go to a restaurant, I would go to a church, I would be at the opening of a car lot. I mean, there wasn't a lot there wasn't a lot of great. I would be on the dock at a marina. So, there was not a lot of great, there's terrible nightmare gigs
those still happen too, Vinny. So,
but at least now down south, you have nightclubs and comedy clubs, at least to some degree. And I think Southerners are very tough to perform in front of. They're just more difficult. You have to win them over. If you go somewhere on the East Coast, it's a little different. People are there to laugh. They may be, you got to still perform, but people are sitting there at first with their arms crossed, like, make me laugh. Why are you so special? I think there's something like that.
What it is, I think people up north are a little more open with their personalities and versus, yes, in the South, people are a little more reserved, and yes, when they go to these public places, you're a spectacle to them, but still when you get them to open up, it is good times. But no, I totally agree with you. There is a difference there. And, I just saw a meme that kind of nailed this dead on. It had the country broken up in four separate sections, and it had the Southeast as act nice but really mean. The North, act mean but really mean. And I think the Northwest was like, act mean but really nice. And then the Southwest was like, act nice but really nice, which I don't know that about Southwest. I don't know. but I can't speak for the North and the South. And that's the one thing about, you know, Northerners is they're honest, you know.
I love it.
It's up front. And Southerners, we're full of shit. You know, when I say we're full of shit is like, we can't stand you, but you won't know it. You know, we'll have a big ass smile on our face.
It's difficult to navigate. It's difficult to navigate. That's why I do like how Northerners carry themselves that way. You know where you stand. If they hate you, guts, you know. You know, you may sit there. And there's a lot of people down here that I think in my own mind that like me, and I know that they don't.
You
have to, at that point, kind of become this machismo alpha male where you just have to like somebody because you like them, and it doesn't matter what they think. And it's like a different level of spirituality where you're like, I don't care what you think of me. I like you. And I know that you probably don't. I know I can tell, I can read your face a little bit every time I say something. You're like, this son of a bitch. But, you know, I don't know. There is more walking around landmines down here.
There is. And, you know, you get to those people that you clearly know don't like you. To me, this is how you know I don't like you. I don't talk to you. I don't interact with you. If I see you, I ain't saying shit to you. You know, and this is the thing. I like everybody for the most part. So if I don't like you, you're a miserable, horrible person. So
I bet they're a lot like you. Is that something?
Maybe. I don't know. Like I will say, let me go on a stretch here. There's probably three people I really do not like that I know. Now, I'm not talking about some celebrity or public, even a politician. Technically, I do not know them. So I don't want to put a true judgment on somebody that I clearly don't know, not unless you're Hitler or Stalin or, you know, some right. sad crap like that. But these people are people I've had personal encounters with. I've got to see their personality with, and they are pieces of shit. So I hope they're not like me. I don't know. I'm a little bit of a selfish, though. And any entertainer is a little bit of narcissists. They have, yep. You know, and so, you know, I know my bad qualities, but at the same time, though, Vinny, I got Antoinette, my wife, who keeps my ass in check and down to earth. So I think that's important, that we need somebody to keep us grounded.
It's great when you're an entertainer to have a wife, if you're a man or gay woman or whatever, to have somebody there that is the, you know, she's the counterweight to whatever you need.
Absolutely.
Because being an entertainer is tough in a lot of ways, especially financially. That means a lot of times that your wife or husband or whatever has to be the breadwinner in a lot of your down seasons, and mm-hmm. kind of has to have that consistency, and also somebody not competing with you. Like if you're two entertainers together, somebody starts getting hot, and the other person's like, oh my God, I can't escape it from my own home. You know,
I've seen those couples too, man. And they're out there. And me personally, I could never be with another entertainer. I couldn't be. Yeah. It's just too much. I'm too much in my own head and all my BS that it would never work. And I see those couples out there, and I've wondered that. I mean, like, I wonder if one gets jealous if the other one gets, you know, booked or gigs or opportunities that the other ones don't. Because that's how all entertainers are to a certain extent. Like, we have friends, we have acquaintances, but when we see them land something good, we're happy as hell for them. And then we're kind of like, I'm jealous as hell too, you know? So it's all of them will admit that too.
You have to, like, it's good to have somebody funny. Like, my wife is very funny.
So is mine.
And so I get material from her. And at least it's like almost a two for one at that point. Like if we're both trying to do two enterprises, we're cutting the material in half. Now I get a little bit like she'll at least, even if her idea sucks, it's one of those bad ideas lead to good ideas. You know, it's metal sharpens metal. And I'll sit there and think, even today, talking about the filmmaking stuff, she says, you need one of your films has to be really feminine. And I said, because I'm worried. It's funny when you when you're making film, there's a lot of things you worry about. This film that you were on, WJHC, is too much me. I'm too old, I'm too ugly, and there's a lot of me in it. The first movie we did, my girlfriend in the movie was Candy. Candy's hot. She's a strong character. She looks good in those Lara Croft booty shorts. Her boobs move around. She has cool hair. She's also kind of a strong, you know, this thing just got released on Prime. And I've had people I don't know message me and go, thank you for having, and I'm not kidding, thank you for having a strong female character. Absolutely. So my daughter can look up to it. And I'm like, that's really cool. And that's intentional. However, it's still a boy movie because I'm talking like I am now, slack jaw jive talk halfway, you know, I'm talking crazy all through the movie. And so it's still this kind of a guy's movie. And she said, you need a feminine, you need something that's really feminine. And I'm like, I think you're right. I'm worried about, it's one of the worries that I have about this second movie is there's not enough eye candy for guys because it's my ugly wrinkled ass, bloated ass. And then there's also, we're not, you know, one of the things you can do when you're shooting outside is you take God's paintbrush and you can claim it as your own. When you're outside in God's green earth, you know, the cinematography, we've had so many people go, God, the cinematography is great. You just hold a camera up. God or whoever, the spirit or whatever, Mother Nature did it. You're taking his grip. We shot this movie, you know, in an ugly, ugly ass television station that we're purporting as a radio station. The thing is horrible looking. It looks terrible. And so I'm sitting there looking at the dailies going, God, this looks awful. How can we fix this? And there was nothing we could do. We had every light in the world trying to make it look softer and sexier. And it just, it's a ugly, and that's what the movie is based on, this old radio station. It looked just like it, but it still is ugly to look at. So we got to come up with creative ways to make the movie not so ugly.
Well, okay. So you started off kind of in stand-up comedy. And, you know, and with radio, correct? And,
that's right.
And now, but you've also got professional wrestling on the title too. Now, granted, I grew up watching wrestling. I think in the 80s and the 90s were the best times ever for watching professional wrestling. So I am a professional wrestling fan. I love watching it. I've even got a hell gig story talking about what I had to do a show in the middle of a wrestling ring.
I've got one of those too.
Yeah, that wasn't fun. But I love wrestling. Now, what got you into wrestling? And let us hear a little bit about that.
Well, I did music for about 12 years and got sick of music. I've got one of those personalities where I get sick of stuff. I'm the only musician you'll ever hear of that was actually a pretty good musician. I'm a really good bass player. I'm not a great singer. I'm a good front man. I'm not a good songwriter, but I'm a fucking great performer and I'm a good bass player. I got sick of it. I hardly ever touch my instruments anymore. Hey-o! I'm sorry. I've got this whole routine going in my head. I should be, since I'm on a show, I should be saying it out loud, but I'm just keeping it for myself. I'm going to keep that for me. But anyway, I don't touch my bass guitars enough. I'm one of the only people you'll ever meet that's like a musician that was actually supporting his family by playing music. He got sick of music. And it's just what happens. And so we did this professional wrestling kind of thing in the band anyway, where I was a bad guy. And then, you know, I was in martial arts. I won the state championship in judo, and I was like, I think I could do this. I was always scared of it, but I kind of gained weight through the years and I got bigger and I wasn't 140 pounds anymore. I was about 240 and some of that was muscle. And I said, I think I could do this. And, got into, wrestling that way because I thought I would be good at it. And there was a group of people that were trying to start a promotion. I got really lucky. I said, hey, I got a PA because I was a musician. I know how to market. I know how to do web pages. I know how to do videos. I know how there was a lot of different little things I could, because of my experience of being a professional musician, I said, I can help you guys get this thing off the ground if you train me. And they're like, okay. And I had really good ideas. At the time in independent wrestling, and you can understand why, people try to put themselves over too much. Like, they're Stone Cold Steve Austin. Everybody wants to be Stone Cold. Everybody wants to be the badass good guy that doesn't, the anti-hero. So everybody kind of got, so I was this guy. I was like, I don't care to play comedic foil. I don't care to play the bad guy. I don't care to be the guy that begs for mercy. I don't care to be the guy that taps out to his own finishing move. You know, and so it was, I was different. I could talk on the mic because of my, you know, comedy and being in front of, you know, 1200 shows and with music. I don't get nervous. That's another one of my little weird things about me, is I've never been nervous performing. I feel more alive there than nervous, which is, most people get nerves and I don't. That's when I feel good, is when I'm in front of people. And so I could, and wrestling made sense eventually. And I got good at it because it is, you have to learn that craft. It is very difficult to look like you're fighting somebody and convincing a bunch of people to suspend disbelief that you're actually angry or actually trying to inflict violence on somebody when you're actually working with that person. But it gets easier, and then it becomes, not to expose the business, but it becomes a series of patterns.
You know, the thing that, you know, I'll first of all, I always say, you know, that there is a lot in common with professional wrestlers and, you know, professional comics, you know, the lifestyle, you know, the traveling, yeah, very similar. You know, I always tell people also, you know, wrestling is also a lot like, you know, magic, you know, like,
yes,
people, even though they know what you're doing is not real, they still want to believe what you're doing is real, so they can get there. And also, we both get hit with steel chairs from time to time. So at least I do.
And it's dangerous.
It's dangerous.
Yeah, there was another magician on the set with you whose hand was crushed. He was David Copperfield's longtime assistant.
And really?
His hand got jacked up in, I can't remember. It's a gimmick that he does. It's like a saw blade that comes down. It's one of David Copperfield's most famous. It was coming down wrong.
Like a buzzsaw illusion.
Yes. And the guy pushed a guy out of the way because the illusion was screwing up, and he got his hand caught in the winch, and it kept going deeper and deeper, and he almost lost his hand. Wow. And he still only got like 60%. Wrestling is dangerous too. And
oh, yeah.
I've used the words that are magician words describing wrestling. As I used artifice and arcane, which I'm sure you guys, you know both what those words mean, but I've used that to describe the sport of pro wrestling, because artifice, there is sort of a con going on.
Mm-hmm.
And with the arcane, I know a bunch of things about the sport that you don't. You know a bunch of stuff about the wrestling or about magic that I don't. I'm using you, royal you. You may know everything about it. I'm just saying people that buy tickets. So we are brothers of the arcane. We both know secrets that the audience doesn't, that they'll never figure out unless we just blather about it.
Yeah.
And that is what keeps the magic alive. And that's what I hate when I see people. I love Penn and Teller. I like hack magicians. I don't want to know how they do the stupid yeah. little coin tricks and stuff.
Well,
I know Penn and Teller are very good about how they do that. They incorporate exposing the business in part of their act, and they want people to become better magicians and stuff. But it's still like, hey, let's not even. I don't even like to think that it's fake, if that makes sense. I like to believe it's.
There's nothing at all wrong with that to me. And also, I think you know, to me, I've never been somebody. I never get hung up on secrets per se, because I mean, there's so many different ways to do so many different things. It's almost impossible to know, for people to think, oh, we know the secrets, magic boy. But and also a lot of my own methods and effects are kind of unique to me. I try to keep it that way as much as I possibly can. But really? Also, though, I think, well, also, when you go see also a magic show, I think you have to program yourself the same way you would go see a horror movie or any type of film, that you almost leave this reality to be a part of what you're experiencing, you know?
Right.
So that's where that comes from. And if you're not doing that, then dude, that you're screwing yourself, you know, go kick rocks, go, you know, read a book, you know?
Oh, but, God, not that.
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't read a book.
Well, you know,
I ain't a loser. I ain't going to read
a loser.
Book.
I'm going to go watch the movie. when that's what we want though. Vinny Vineyard, we want people to watch a movie right now, because this is where I'm going and this is where I want to go. Let's talk about, we got some big damn news for Vinny Vineyard, a filmmaker. Now, first of all, this guy's got a freaking resume like Forrest Gump, if you guys hadn't, you know, can't tell already, you know.
And an IQ.
Radio and an IQ. I think he got Forrest beat by a couple, at least. But no, he's a stand-up comic, he's a radio DJ, he's a wrestler, and he's a filmmaker. Now, let me say this, I want to give you a big shout out. I've read film scripts before, I've read them, and I've also read, I've read playwrights that were trying to be humorous. And, you know, I thought this is horrible. Because this is taking way too long to get to the damn funny. And it wasn't their fault. It was just that, hey, you know, that's just how they write. You know, they didn't know any better. And whenever you sent me the script to read it for WHJCAM,
I did close.
Give it to me. What is it?
To help you out, it stands. It's a religious station. It's W Jesus H Christ AM. So
okay,
it's
J H C A. I'll screw that up the rest of the show.
We just call it the radio movie.
W Jesus H Christ. I love that, by the way. Yeah. Anyways, when I read the script, I was like, holy shit, this is funny. There was a couple times to where I actually laughed when I was reading it, and I was like, yeah, I want to be a part of this. This sounds really cool.
So, you did great, by the way.
Thank you.
You were actually my tag team partner, Big Luke. You were his ringtone for about 2 weeks doing your part. Yeah.
Oh my God, dude. That is awesome.
In our little group, we showed your clip about 5 or 6 times. So you were great.
That is awesome. Well, you know, I mean, I read it so I could. Now it makes sense to me, though, that you have a background in comedy, stand up, because I can tell by the way the script was written. So I thought, this is funny. I really love it. And but now let's talk about the big news right now. The big news is that you, sir, are on Amazon Prime right now as we speak.
I am. But let me put a pin in that. Thank you for building that up. But I also wanted to go back to talking about the radio thing for a second.
Because I kind of actually
practiced this in the shower when I was like, what if he goes here, I want to talk about this for a second. But the whole thing about that script that is crazy is that 90% of it, even though it has demons and a black Jesus and the Y2K was actually the end of the world. It's a fable about Y2K. It's 90% what I saw experiencing Southern gospel stuff for the first time in my life. And what was beautiful is my friend, who's another wrestler, El Gordo Gringo, but in real life, he's Travis Graves, who's in the movie. And he's on my ghost show. We do a ghost TV show and stuff like that. He was sitting there going, what are they doing? He's never seen Pentecostal or extremely athletic, let's put gospel type services. And I didn't either when I was a DJ. I just wanted to be funny on the radio. I wanted to be David Letterman on the radio. And so I'm sitting here and I couldn't get a job because I didn't have a degree in communications, which is, you get a degree in communications and about $1.08 will get you a coffee at McDonald's. It's a worthless degree, but you had to have one to get in the radio. And so the only place that would let me in is this just cockamamie thing. So getting back to the point that you're saying my script is funny, the reason I got out of comedy, to kind of put an exclamation point of why I quit, is I was not funny as far as being creative with jokes. I couldn't come up with jokes. What I could do is I've gotten funnier over life because I've had more and more life experience. I think I would be a better funny comedian now because of my history and the crazy shit I've seen. I couldn't when I was 19. How are you funny? If you're funny at 19, you're going to be fucking funny the rest of your life.
You are, and I gotta say this, okay? And I've been saying this for a while. Now, this is gonna sound like old man. I'm not discouraging anyone young at all from doing stand-up. I am not. But I promise you this. If you do stand-up and you're in your 20s, you don't have as much life experience to pull material from. So right. As you get a little older, you got a little more things to pull material from. So I, you know, that's going to sound like me screaming, saying, get off my lawn, but it's the truth.
It's mileage. People, and I'm going to just interject here. People don't get good at shit until they're in their 40s, 50s, and 60s.
That's
I know it sounds. I know it sounds crazy because we're a youth-driven culture, and we have been since the 50s, since rock and roll popped up. But people, okay, you can play a guitar, but can you put on a show?
Yeah.
You can look sexy, but can you really deliver life to the part of the movie that you're playing in? And I think comedians, wrestlers get better as they're older, even though their bodies start to give out. Now, athletes, of course, they're shot by 20 and 30 or whatever. But everything else, especially magicians, pro wrestlers, comedians, people that are on TV, they get better as they get older, and then they get too old, and then they suck. But yeah, so going to the script, it was funny, but it didn't take much. Your character in the movie was a minister that was throwing fireballs, invisible fireballs, at his congregation, and he knocked a black velvet painting of Peyton Manning off the wall. And that's when I was like, called the station manager going, do we need to call 911? And she's like, oh, what time is it? And I said, it's 10:45. She goes, oh, it's Brother Sparks. He's fine. You know, and I said, well, I don't want anybody to get hurt. Somebody hit their head. And then she's like, well, it's a good thing he's a faith healer. And she hangs up the phone with him. And that's not too far from what I saw. I mean, it was at 19. I could have never imagined that situation would have happened. At 46. That's a long time ago, but it's still in my brain. So when I'm typing, it was just flowing out of me. It was just like, and it was like going through a family album photo book. I couldn't believe all of the stuff coming out of me. So I just wanted to say the reason I stopped comedy was I stole a lot of material. And I didn't know at the time how wrong that was. I know now, you know, Carlos Mencina, what he did, stole 5 jokes, and people are like, kill him, hang him on the wall. You know, like Handmaiden's Tale, you know, we're going to put you on the wall, and he's pretty much sunk. But at the time, of course, you know, I always heard that the people who are deemed most creative conceal their sources the best. You know, I always tried to steal from obscure sources. In wrestling, people were like, my God, you're so creative. Bullshit. Everything I said was from a Parliament album. Even when I said the Mothership thing just then, that was from Star Child or some song of theirs. Like, I'd have to sit there and think Mothership Connection.
Well, I do think you're creative. Let me. We're going to clarify that you are creative.
Thank you.
A lot of people, even in stand up, and especially in magic, a lot of people do not know this in magic, but almost every good magician. And these are magicians who are able to become their own personalities, their own, you know, their own self. But you start off emulating someone else. You start off by saying, you know, I mean, there's several people I can name, you know, some names right off the bat that I looked up to and wanted to be right off the bat. And even so much for a while, I even acted like that person and, you know, would say, you know, the words and stuff.
Doug Henning.
Oh, well, Doug Henning, you know, you know, his name came up last night. I never talk about Doug Henning, but well, you know what was crazy about Doug Henning, though, is, dude, who did Doug Henning? Because no one was like Doug Henning. I mean, he was an acid trippy damn, I mean, magician. I mean, shit, you know, it was magic and mushrooms, and, you know, it was real.
It was a little bit gay in the 70s, even though he was completely straight. I told my wife, because I had several people read for the part that you played. We had people coming from Arkansas, and they even said in the script, they said, I like the fact there's Street Fighter snobbery in the script, because the minister, as he's like putting down Mortal Kombat and all the other games that had fireballs in it, and he was like, it's Street Fighter 2. I feel Street Fighter. And the people were like, I love that, because that's, I'm a Street Fighter guy. I don't like Mortal Kombat. Like, so anyway, I was like, you picked up on the Street Fighter snobbery. And I think it's a vastly superior fighting game. But anyway, I told my wife, I said, the guy from Arkansas can't do it. I said, but Lance Adams, who's a mutual friend of ours, the guy with the beard, he's a comedian.
And he was Lance.
And he was he's in the movie too, doing a minister part as well. Comedians. They knocked it out of the park doing these ministers. So anyway, I told my wife, I said, we've got a comedic or a comedy magician. And she loves comedy. She loves magic. And she said, can he get us to his show? And I said, I'm going to, when he's in town, I missed the last one. I think you were in Knoxville. I said, I'm going to talk to him about when he's in town. I'll take you go see this guy. Cause I've seen some of the stuff you've done. You're very good, by the way. And she'll just lose her shit. She loves Doug Henning, by the way. That's why.
Doug Henning was the man, baby. And, my hero, one of my big heroes, I've got a few, but Harry Anderson was a big hero. And
wow.
And, you know, I had the opportunity to meet Harry a couple times, and he was the man, you know.
Were you a fan of Night Court, or were you a fan of his magic or his stand up?
Well, I was a fan of all of it, you know. But of course, you know, growing up as a kid, you know, I have memories of me and my dad sitting up watching Night Court, you know, and of course, Harry would always pull out a rubber chicken or do something. Probably one of the greatest stand-up comedy specials, comedy magic specials that you'll ever see is Hello Sucker from HBO back in the late 80s.
I got to watch it.
It's gold.
I got to watch it. I'm going to write it down right now.
Hello Sucker, Harry Anderson, Hello Sucker. Definitely, I highly recommend check that out. But Harry was a big influence to me. And but the other interesting thing about Harry is Harry wasn't a bad actor, you know? No. He had his he's had his grill into some movies that, I mean, like when you look at the original It, you know, Harry Anderson, you know, is in there, you know. Some people, you know, forget that. And it just blows my mind. I'm like, man, he was in so many cool stuff back then, you know. But let me
great character actor.
But let's ask you this, because, you know, I know in stand-up you learn how to act. And whether you know it or not, when you're on stage, eventually, you know, you're telling the same bits over and over and over, making it sound like the first time you're ever saying it. You get an acting skill.
Laughing at funny parts when you've laughed a thousand times.
Absolutely, but I've laughed a thousand times. Yeah. I don't want to give that secret away right now on the podcast, but there is a little technique that we all do sometimes to win you over. But now, Vinny, you know, watching The Hike, I noticed, I was like, you know, well, Vinny's a natural, you know, in front of the camera. So you could tell you're very comfortable. You have a very relatable character, which to me, just like on stage, if an audience can relate to you, they're going to like you. And I think it's important too with the character that you play in front of the, you know, in front of the camera. Now, what made you take that leap though into filmmaking? What made you say, because I mean, you've established the fact that Vinny Vineyard, if he wants to do it, he does it. Okay. So, but what made you say, you know what, man, I want to start writing movies? Because I mean, we talked about the radio. That was an experience that's real, and it just kind of flowed out. But the height came first, correct?
Yes. Yes.
So where did that come from?
Well, Luke and I are partners, Big and Funky Productions. Big Luke, I'm Funkmaster V. I used to have a giant afro, and we were a tag team for a lot of years, and we were really good. We were very comedic. We were a comedic tag team, which was rare, and that was our job. So we got into paranormal television, and we kept signing contracts, and those contracts would dissipate. And we're talking the last 4 years of our lives, we were going to be the next big thing that never happened. This year, or 2020, 2019 and 2020, we signed a Netflix deal.
And nice.
We were so excited. And coronavirus obliterated that. And we were like, screw these TV shows. I said, the coronavirus was down. And Kevin Smith said something. He said, when he started making Tusk and Yoga Hosers, even though those aren't great movies, he said, I need to do what Wayne Gretzky's dad told him. Don't go where the puck is. Go where the puck is going to be. And I said, and so Luke and I were like, coronavirus is here. There's nobody making any damn movies right now. Let's fucking do it. And so we allocated assets. We got a hot chick friend of ours that's in our comedy skits. We have a YouTube page, Big and Funky Productions, tons of comedy skits that we do. We have ghosts. So anyway, we were like, we have a hot chick, rock and roll singer. So we take this girl. She looks good. She's got cool dreadlocks. We'll put her in the movie. She sings two fucking songs, original songs in the movie. She does the opening track and she does the song of Spearfinger, which is actually a song that the Cherokee legend of Spearfinger sings. She does those. So we use that. Travis is a professional axe thrower. So we use that in the movie where guys throwing axes and he's a bow and arrow guy. So me and Luke know how to fight. So we fight. So we are like, let's get all these things. We're around a gorgeous place and we go to places that we had paranormal experiences on our TV show. So the Road to Nowhere out in Bryson City, and there's all these stories and things that we experienced that were crazy on our paranormal show. We were like, this is the skeleton of a good movie. And we actually, a lot of the things that happened in the hike were real stories that happened to my brother. Because my brother's a hiker. He's totally different than me. I hate the outdoors. So you're talking about somebody who's relatable. Luke thought it would be funny to put Funkmaster V in the woods because we shot a pilot for a network called Renaissance Men where I had to go fish and I was in a mink coat. I was miserable as hell. He thought that was the funniest thing he ever saw. And so he was like, let's put Funkmaster V in the woods. So that's what you're seeing is Funkmaster V bitching because his girlfriend, who's Cherokee, wants to take him to the woods. And he's wearing Converse shoes with no laces. And he takes brass knuckles as protection. I mean, the guy's a moron. What are you going to do with brass knuckles in the woods? Punch a bear? You know, he thinks that's going to protect him in the woods. Get a knife. A knife can cut rope. You can, you know, he's got brass knuckles.
Well, so, I want to say this while you brought it up because you brought up Luke. Luke is the guy that looks like a combination between Kevin Nash and the Big Lebowski.
Exactly.
So I do want to give him a shout out as well in the hike because good actor.
He's probably the best actor of all four of us. Candy's really good. I'm the worst actor.
Candy's good.
And she's won some awards for the hike. She's won best actress in a few of these fests. And she just won one that was the best actress, not even horror actress, out of a whole festival. That was a big deal. So, and her transformation and stuff was really cool in the movie. And Travis is a pretty good actor too, but I'm the worst actor, but I was the best at ad-libbing. And the reason it was going to be Travis and Candy as a couple, because they're closer in age and I'm starting to age out of being the romantic lead. I think this movie that you're in, the radio, that's the last time I'm going to have a girlfriend and make out with a girlfriend on cameras, because it's like, I'm too fucking old. We got to get a younger guy who it's believable that I have girlfriends that are this hot, you know, this young too, you know? So, I mean, so, um, So, but the reason I got the lead part, Luke decided to put me in that because he shooting outside is difficult. Hiking to a location is difficult. You're at the mercy of the sun. So instead of writing this elaborate script and having people memorize lines, I basically went out there and ad-libbed. It was like, we're going to go here. This is the point of this scene. And so I just started talking. And so Candy, God bless her heart, is trained in theater. She's having to ad-lib with my ass the whole movie. You can see this is kind of fun if you like to ever watch the movie again. I keep touching her arms and stuff. She doesn't like to be touched, not just by me. She's kind of one of those people that don't like to be touched. So I'll sit there and go, you've got nice arms. And I'll run my finger down her arm and you'll just see her freeze up like this. Because she's one of those people that is really weird about being touched. And I just love screwing with her on camera. And there's a scene after the bestiality of the wrestler scene where she's like, that's a great story. And I'm like, well, thank you. And I run my finger down her arm and it made it in the movie. And she just kind of goes, she's loving it. She's like, and well, it was just a rib on her.
Okay, so let me ask you this real quick, Vinny. In a million years, did you ever think that you would have your work displayed on a platform as large as Amazon Prime?
Luke and I have went through a lot of losses together. And the advice that I tell people is you got to fail forward. You never get down in the dumps and go, we suck. You've got to realize.
Amen. Hold on. That you said, first of all, people don't realize that I'm told no a hell of a lot more than I'm told yes. A lot of people say, Danny, you're killing it, man. You're here. Dude, I get told no a whole lot. But what you just said, fall forward, man. Dude, that's amazing right there. Totally.
Well, we have failed a million times. And we've gone out and sucked. And we've gone out and owned it. And the thing that I know, there's 7 billion people on this planet. And probably half of them want to be an entertainer because it's fun. It looks fun. It's actually not fun. It is fun in a way. A lot of it is terrible. It's just like any other job. Booking yourself is the worst shit in the world. It's the worst, one of the worst things. When you're an entertainer and you're calling up, hey, I'd like to come down. And
why? Even with an agent, though, you know, I've got 2 agents and I still have to book myself.
Yeah.
So it don't go away.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's not an easy – none of this is easy. Everything is difficult. I don't care. A doctor is difficult, a lawyer, the janitor is difficult, all points in between. But being an entertainer is very difficult. But you've got to continually fail. Everybody that's famous that you see in movies or whatever has been told a million times. And there's people – their big movie may be funny or great, and people may love it. You'll never see them again. What happened? Did they do something wrong to go out there and sodomize a puppy? No, it just the environment changed and something went this way and they got second place a bunch in all these big roles and they just started to slide away. And then you see them on an infomercial going, hey, I've lost 20 pounds with this new hula hoop diet, you know, or whatever. So you've got to be grateful and always humble. Because anybody could take our spot at any time. Not that we have anything illustrious right now, but to answer your question, I knew we had people in the industry keep saying, if you and Luke keep doing what you're doing, something's going to hit. Because we have a unique je ne sais quoi. We have a unique way of telling stories that are very big and funky and very unique. And the good thing about me and you, my friend, I don't know how old you are, but the older group, we're resilient because we're Gen X and we're used to know. We're used to things being high touch, not high tech. We're used to going out. I used to be able to go get a job, my first job in radio. I went out there with a winning smile and a twinkle in my eye and got a job because I conned the guy. I put him in the trick bag. There's none of that now. You put your whatever job you want, you put it on a monster.com and you hope somebody thinks, oh, that's an interesting name, or maybe she's got big boobs or whatever. I'll call her in for an interview or whatever. There's no telling what gets people to in these opportunities. But me and you have woodshed life, and it's something I don't think a lot of people younger get. And there's something missing, and I'm not trying, I don't want to be like you, I don't want to be like the old man, we're on the rocket, Waldorf and whoever at the Muppets, I can't remember the guy's name, Statler and Waldorf up here going, hey, young kids suck. I don't want to be like that. But I want to tell people who are young, you have such a great opportunity because your peers are a bunch of weaklings. So if you are somebody who has the ambition and the drive, we're going to die soon. I got type 2 diabetes. I ain't going to be making 100 movies. I got a few, and then I'm going to be in the ground somewhere soon. There's opportunities for you because your peer group is a little off. And they can't compete with Gen X. How can you be cooler than Gen X? You can't be cooler than Gen X. So the thing that you got to do is you just got to be yourself and work. And if you have the drive of somebody like Gen X, and you have the intelligence of how to market yourself, and you can figure out this insane opportunity that you have with all the social media, and you can do something really good today and tomorrow, 90 million people can be watching it. That's an opportunity. And if you can navigate that, which is something that Gen X is having a hard time with, because I'm just like, I don't get Reddit. I don't get it. I can't be a part of it.
I'm with you. I don't know that now.
I don't understand how somebody does well on TikTok. I've got Facebook down and I've got Instagram down. But some of these, you know, if you're somebody who's young and you're talented and you've got the drive and you can figure out all that jive, dude, you've got it. You've got a great opportunity, because there's a lot of people just don't have that ambition. So we failed a lot. And we basically, I just felt like my wrestler, my Baltimore, my fucking Street Fighter self, I said, I'm going to grab this GD thing. And I'm going to bash its head to the windshield until we break through and get an opportunity. And that's what it took. The hatred of failing, the hatred of not being able to put our shit somewhere where people can go, I hate that or I love that. The hatred of that thought is what drove me. I told Luke, when we got, it's like contract 3 fell. And Luke gets down on himself. He's a big giant, he's 6'8". He used to be a cop, tough guy, but he gets down. Because he never had that success. I had success in music. I've had success, and he's done wrestling. He's been to the WWE. He's done ECW. He's done WWF. He's a songwriter. He gets up and gets all the girlies dropping their panties up there in Gatlinburg with his guitar. But he's never had widespread success. And I said, I guarantee you, before we're done, we're going to get something on a worldwide platform. Then the world can decide. I hate these two MFers. Or these guys are pretty good, or a group can be either way. But I said, I don't care. I'm going to die but trying this. We're going to get this. We're going to cross this and go over the finish line. And I'm telling you, I had to learn how to edit, make web pages, film, cinematography tricks, sound editing tricks. Okay. We are an amalgamation of just jack of all trades. How do you got to perform, got to write, you got to direct, you got to produce, you got to get investors, you got to pitch, you got to make things technical, you got to jump through hoops. I had to learn how to do all this stuff. There's certain things I'm not as good at as others, but it's just got to pick up the phone, got to call this person. Can we film here? What kind of camera do we, you have to get intelligent with tech stuff. And it's like, if there's not a lot of people that can do this, and if you have the fortitude, you can get it across the line. And the good thing about what's happened with us this week, this has been a big week. Saturday, Juneteenth. What's up, my brothers? Juneteenth, the hike went on Amazon Prime, and now it can be seen all over English speaking countries. And it's a big opportunity for us. And we're going to make some money. Not a lot of money, hopefully a lot of money, but we're going to make some money out of this. But it's the brick of the foundation of which we're going to build the Church of Big and Funky. We're going to have 3 low-budget horror comedies. We've got 3 other movies that are going to take a little bit more money. And then after that, who knows? Somebody may hire us. We may start writing for TV. We may make more of our own movies. But it is an opportunity. And this has pumped lifeblood into the haggardy old body of Big and Funky. This has been a big week for us.
That okay. Well, let's do this. Okay. First of all, I do want to say I'm so excited. And as soon as you know, put that out there that the hike was on Amazon Prime, I went directly and watched it, and I did enjoy the movie.
Thank you.
And I can't wait to see the next one. I really cannot wait to see the next one.
It's gonna be funnier.
I can't wait, man. But now let's do this. Vinny Vineyard, on every episode of the Abracadam podcast, we always have to ask our guests a hell gig story. Do you got a hell gig story? Whether it was whenever you were filming, wrestling, DJing, comedy, whatever, let's hear a good one. You definitely got to have a good hell gig story.
Nashville, Tennessee.
Bum, 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 bum. Music City, baby. Let's hear it.
Music City. White Stallion. My band is called Pimpin' Ain't Easy. We are three white guys playing hip-hop songs and funk songs. We are with the Oak Ridge Boys and the band OAR. If you remember them, way 90s band, kind of like Zebrahead. Yes, that impressive. They had like a song and they went away.
Okay.
So we're opening because we're the nobodies. We're at this bar. We're not getting paid great, but we are getting paid. And it was a gig in between two gigs that were paying good. So you know about that too, being a performer. Yeah. Sometimes you have it's better than nothing type thing. We're playing, and it's we didn't know, unbeknownst to us, it was National Line Dancing Night at the White Horse Saloon.
I remember the White Horse.
So we start playing whatever song we kicked off with. 99 Problems, Gin and Juice, Gold Digger by Kanye West, whatever we opened up, and somebody comes up on stage and hands us a note. And we're like, you know, whatever. She gave me money. We're just up there jamming, and we're getting all these people looking at us weird. We look at the note after, and it says, play something country so we can dance to it. We don't know one damn country song. We got to play for an hour and a half. So you have all these white people in the very whitest of outfits with the very whitest of hips with their hands upon their hips looking at us like we just knocked down the Jefferson Davis statue or what. I don't know, man. It was like they looked at us with angst, bewilderment, confusion, hurt. And so we get done with a very hard set, but we had fun with it at the end of it. And the lead singer of OAR comes up, nervous wreck. What do we do? What do we do? And I said, well, do you know Jolene? And he's like, no. And I said, well, then you're just going to have to go up there and be you, baby. So it was funny that a signed artist was like in a nervous wreck. Who booked that show? I mean, somebody needs to get fired. That was terrible.
Somebody definitely doesn't know what the hell they were doing. And it's funny, though, you would think, and, you know, I mean, that's one thing about being a performer. Sometimes shit happens, man, and you got to think on your toes and you got to pull it off, you know? So, yeah, I bet that was funny, though.
It was funny in retrospect. I enjoy it. See, it goes back to bad comedy. I loved the awkwardness of it. I actually reveled in that. And that's what our band did, is that we liked making situations more awkward and exploiting that too. So anyway, that was fun for me.
Nothing like a good awkward moment. Well, here, speaking of awkward, let's get right up into awkward, baby, because this is the Abracadam podcast. In every Abracadam podcast episode, we got to show a magic trick, son. So I'm going to show you some magic. I tell you what, hold on real quick, though. Bottle cap.
How'd you do that?
Been snorting them beers, son.
You had that up there the whole time.
The whole time. That you don't want to know what else is up there. But let's do this. Let's do this. I want to keep this as honest and fascinating as I possibly can. We're going to try to, because this is through Zoom. It's a little difficult to do sleight of hand, especially whenever one of the hands isn't yours either. Okay? Everything's a lie, Vinny Vineyard. Some TV movie magic. Let's do this. We're going to do some mind reading, bro.
All right.
I'm going to try. I don't know how far deep I want to get inside your melon, but
it's dangerous.
It is dangerous. I can tell. That's it's like I wouldn't say it's not Dollywood happening up in that bitch. So
definitely not.
But what we're gonna do, we're gonna do some mind read. I'm gonna try to do some mind reading here. And I do this with a lot of guests. I really do. So we're gonna try with you. I thought, you know, let's try. Let's just give it a shot. If you will, Vinny, think of one of these cards. Just think of one. Don't tell me, just think. You got it? You got it in your
second? Yeah.
You got one. I do. All right. Now what I'm gonna do, I'm gonna lose the cards in the deck here, give it a shuffle.
You're never gonna get this one.
Well, probably not. Probably not. You know, I don't know. I tell you what, I'm gonna give it an old cut here, so I'm gonna be obligated. Okay, I'm gonna be obligated. What was the card you're thinking of? What is the card you're thinking of?
Ten of Diamonds.
The Ten of Diamonds. Now, I like I said, it is tough. You made me a little nervous, but this is the crazy thing on the Abracadam podcast. I'm always right, Vinny. Yes, you have been abracadammed, my man.
That's good.
No, you know what? I sold my soul, bro. That's how I do these things.
On the crossroads.
Satan was like, at the crossroads, Satan said, "Hey, Danny boy, do you want $1 million?" And I said, "No, I want to show Vinny Vineyard card tricks through Zoom on a podcast." He said, "Deal." And then I said, "While you're at it, throw in some red hair and make me 5'6", will you?" So, I mean, there we go. But I tell you what, Vinny, let's do this. Let's do this because we're going to move right on. Okay, we're going to move right on. You being a filmmaker, I was kind of focusing this question on the movies, okay? Let's see. If you could be in any movie, only one movie, what movie would that be?
It's one of two. I'm going to say, I'm going to change my answer. I'm going to say Crossroads, and not the Britney Spears one.
But Ralph Macchio.
Ralph Macchio and Joe Seneca Crossroads.
Oh, man, that was a great damn movie, dude.
That's what got me into music.
That is awesome, dude. That, first of all, because you just referenced the Crossroads. We just talked about the Crossroads. And bingo. Now you got, that was a great movie. And it does cover a lot of corners, especially with you. You know, you've got the musician, you know. So that is awesome. The Crossroads. That's a perfect answer. That is a perfect answer. Let's do one more thing too before we get out of here, because we are getting close here on time. But I one thing I wanted to talk to you about, because you know, like I said, you are a filmmaker. What is your opinion about movies today versus the 80s and 90s? Like, you know, the movie you just referenced is a classic. You know, everything is, you know, superhero movies are the big deal right now. And don't get me wrong, they make money. They do make money. But do you think, like, how we can look back at the 80s and talk about the Crossroads, or you can look in the 90s, the Farrelly Brothers comedy movies are just on another level, you know? Is this time missing something because of the superhero movies are such a big thing? We don't get the comedies or the dramas that we've had in the past, it seems like.
I kind of think the superhero movies are saving local theaters. I think the MCU did. I just know, because I've done stuff before, that the MCU putting 22 movies out in 10 years that tell a cohesive story, and most of those movies are watchable, and a lot of those movies are very good. That was an amazing feat. You can see DC is just sucking. They can't find their best movie, Shazam, which is a comedy. So I think the MCU is doing a good job, but like you said, in the wake, we're losing soul. But now, the MCU does have a lot of soul. There's a lot of comedy. The thing they do so good is that they do so many things good. There's like, sometimes it's a cloak and dagger. Sometimes it's a heist movie. Sometimes it's a period piece. Sometimes it's a coming of age story. They do a great job with a lot of that. Sometimes there's a lot of sex appeal. Sometimes it's, you know, Tony Stark being funny.
Do you think movie. They will? Okay, this is. Don't get me wrong, dude. One of my I love the 80s Supermans. I can sit and watch anytime. Christopher Reeves to me will always be the Superman. I think in my, and I've even said this, I think Michael Keaton by far was the best Bruce Wayne. I will argue this with
crazy
geek ever. Absolutely.
It's crazy that he was.
Michael Keaton could tap into what Bruce Wayne really was.
He really could.
But let's say one thing about superhero movies, though, they don't really age as well for some reason, it seems like. What do you think? I mean, because like, that's why I look at what we're experiencing right now is really on another level of superhero movies. No one has done it what Marvel has done before ever in the history of film. But at the same time, I'm like, is this generation, is Gen Z and our young millennials missing out on The Godfathers, missing out on some of those kind of films that aren't happening right now?
I think that's the fact that they don't age well, that's a great observation. I hadn't even thought of it. I've just been like, I've been like a kid in a candy shop. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, who would ever thought there would be a better superhero movie than Spider-Man 2?
Yeah.
And then you look at it now, and it's like, yeah, that doesn't, you're right. It didn't age as well.
Well, you know, remember whenever Batman, when we first got our Batman movie, that was, the soundtrack was amazing, a big damn deal. But and since then, there's been, you know what, two other Batman trilogies. So it's like it's the moving on and on. And it's just almost I don't know. I just kind of worry a lot. I worry a lot about art in general right now.
Sure.
So
and I know you probably want to go, but that goes back to the whole thing why I think music is dead, is that you can download somebody's whole catalog in 10 seconds. You don't have to go find it. You don't have to go. You don't go to a friend's house and go, let you listen to this. And you're like, oh, wow. And you get high and you're watching the cool shit, the lights on the wall. And you're just like, whoa, this was a great time. It's boom. Hey, have you heard this guy? Boom. I've got it all right here. Your whole life's work. 40 years of you songwriting. It's right here. I don't like this song. I don't like that song. I like these three songs. You don't have a chance to really get into all the albums and what they meant at the time. And so they're missing out. And how can you argue? You can't go back and go, wait a minute, you need to wait. You need to go buy the album, and you can't tell people to do that because it's impossible. So going back to Wayne Gretzky and Kevin Smith, we got to figure out how we can save art. And I think live performance is one of the few things you're doing it. Movies, when me and Luke decided to make movies, we recognize that partially is that movies are dying. We can tell these crazy stories the big movie houses aren't going to tell these stories. We have six movies called the Smoky Mountain Chronicles. There's six Southern fables based around the Great Smoky Mountains that are all about legends, myths, and things that have truly happened in the Great Smoky Mountains. And we're putting a big and funky flair on them. Love it or hate it. Be like Ric Flair. Love it or hate it.
Ooh.
Woo. There's not going to be six movies like this that you're ever going to see. And that's what we're trying to contribute. And some people will be like, man, those are good. Some people are like, those are the worst pieces of shit I've ever seen. But to answer your question too, I mean, no era of movies is ever going to touch the 70s. Those gritty 70s movies that just make you feel so sad. Taxi Driver, Dog Day Afternoon, The Conversation. It just nothing makes you just feel so depressed. It's watching those gritty 70s movies, man.
I do gotta do one thing. I gotta give one shout out because you made me think of this when you said Taxi Driver. Is now I will say they do have this movie, The Joker, which was very well done. And it almost did not feel like it to me, it wasn't even really a comic book movie to me, you know. I got to say they knocked that out of the park, but it would be nice if we could get more of those films, you know, to get out to see some of those. I'm not shitting on the superhero films. I love them too, like anybody else. I geek out on them. But you're right. I think we need more of those 70 movies, the 80s. And now let's do this real quick before we get out of here. WJHC AM. Okay. that I cannot wait to see this. I'm dying to see this movie. I'm gonna let you listeners are gonna get sick of me talking about this because I'm in the movie and I'm excited. And I've been in stuff before, but this is my first speaking part. So first real speaking part in a movie.
That's a shame.
Well, I look to do more. I hope to do more. Really, I really do hope to do more. But this is part of a big thing called the Smoky Mountain Chronicles. And how many movies did you say was this part of?
Six
movies.
And they're all different from each other too. They're all vastly, vastly different. And we got a new website this week, if I can plug it. Big and Funky Productions, biginfunkyproductions.com. If you go there, you can see all six movies. We've got there's like logos and insignias for all six movies. They're taking place all over the Mid-South. So you can kind of see, oh, that one's going to be in my hometown. And normally that means we shot in that location. So that may be cool to you as well. And if you're a true Southerner, we're using mainly all Southern actors, transplants in mine and Luke's case, Southern musicians, Southern locations, Southern stories, but it's got this really funky tip on it too. So it'll be a little different. It's not just a bunch of yeehaw, because you can tell the hike's not yeehaw.
No,
it's funky.
Well, okay. Well, there we go. So they can find you at biginfunkyproductions.com.
Yep.
All right. And then also, guys, if you have not done so yet, be sure to check out The Hike on Amazon Prime and give it a 5-star rating.
Thank you.
Definitely, my abracadamets. Go out there and give it a 5-star rating because it's a good flick. It is. I enjoyed it.
It's a campy horror movie. It's based on three different and if you give us 5 stars, Amazon likes that. And they'll stay on the platform longer. More people will watch it. And it will help us get the other movies up on. And we want you, man. We want Danny on there too. So if the Amazon Prime loves The Hike, that means the next movie that's got Danny in it it's going to slide up there effortlessly.
Nice.
It's like a date with your wife, or not your wife, your mom. I'm sorry. I meant to make a mom joke. I said, why? That's too personal. We ended that's on not, a
low. We can do mom. We can do moms.
Mom. Yeah. I said wife. I don't know. That was
wife.
I don't know why that
your wife's from. Mom and maybe your grandma. Wife. You know, grandma, we can do grandma. Well, all right, Vinny Vineyard. This has been a blast, man. And I can't wait to get you back on. But thank you so much, man, for coming on the Abracadam podcast.
Hey, man, thank you so much for having me and promoting everything. Did you see the new poster, by the way?
Absolutely, I did. I love it. Yeah.
All right, I just wanted to see if you saw it. It's really cool.
All right, Abracadamets, I hope you enjoyed that fun conversation with Vinny Vineyard. And if you guys get a chance, go out and check out biginfunkyproductions.com for all the upcoming films that Vinny and his partner are going to be putting out. I promise you guys definitely want to check it out. And definitely be sure to check out The Hike on Amazon Prime right now. Give it a 5-star rating. And my movie, the one that I'm in, WJHCAM. Check out my character, Pastor Sparks. I think you guys are going to love it. I know I cannot wait to see it. And like always, Abracadamets, thank you for listening.
Please stop drinking vodka at my kid's birthday party!